So we just do it individual, because number, first of all, number four is the multiple agenda item. Number five is approval of the minutes. Number six is the update from the representatives of the mayor.
It's on.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. We have four of us, so we have a quorum. Vice Chair, Mr. Lippman, is on his way, but we have a quorum, so we can start the meeting. Good afternoon. Welcome to the meeting of the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners. If you're not on our mailing list, please be sure to sign up in the back of the room, and you can find out more about our bunk meetings. During the meeting today, we will discuss the items listed on the meeting agenda in numerical order, unless I receive a request from a board member to take it on an item out of order. Copies of the agenda, again, and related documents are in the back of the room. If any board member has a conflict of interest at the time an agenda item is announced for discussion, the board member should identify the general nature of the conflict, indicate that he or she is recusing him or herself from participating in the matter, and leave the room during the duration of the discussion of that particular item. Before we make a decision on any item, members of the public are provided with the opportunity to provide comments on the item under consideration. Members of the public who wish to speak on multiple agenda items shall be allowed to speak for a total of 5 minutes per meeting and may allocate time in 1 minute increments per item when the agenda item is called, or they may speak during the multiple agenda item comment period. During the multiple agenda item comment period, a member of the public may speak for up to 5 minutes on multiple agenda items that are stated on the agenda specifically. If you have a general comment on an item that is not listed on the agenda, then you may provide us with your comment during the public comments portion of the meeting. Public comment should be directed to the board rather than to individuals. I don't know why I'm not reading this with my glasses. Please understand that there are applicable laws that limit the actions that we may take during today's meeting. Thus, we may be legally prohibited from acting on a concern that you expressed. However, note that your concern may become a topic of discussion at a future board meeting after we have had the chance to list it as an item on the agenda. Please fill out a speaker card for each agenda item you want to address so that you may be heard on any agenda item. You will be called when it is your turn to speak. Please be sure to place the number of the item or items you wish to speak on the card. Copies of the speaker cards are located, again, in the back of the room. If you intend to speak on any item or items, you must turn in your speaker card or cards prior to the start of the meeting or prior to the call of that particular item. And you may hand the speaker card over here to staff. Either one. Mike or Miguel. When a person is speaking, they are entitled to courtesy and respect. Please refrain from any other discussion in the room. If you wish to chat, then please take that discussion outside while our meeting is in session. We treat one another with respect. That means that we act with civility and decorum. Competing viewpoints may be articulated without the need for inappropriate or uncivil actions. Last but not least, please switch your cell phones. Switch your cell phone ringers to vibrate or silent. Thank you very much. Okay, that's the end of the meeting. I read all those instructions, right? They're very long. Okay. Want to call the roll for a quorum, please?
Commissioner Atkinson?
Here.
Commissioner Lippman? Absent. Commissioner Schaefer?
Here.
Commissioner Derek Guidos?
Here.
Commissioner Weavy? Absent. Commissioner Regalado?
Here.
And Commissioner Avakian Karoglian? Absent. We have quorum.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any, next item on the agenda is number three, which is discussion with neighborhood council representatives, if there are any here, on any neighborhood council resolution or community impact statement filed with the city clerk, and I don't think we have any information on that, on any community impact statements that have been filed, which relates to any agenda item being considered for today. All right. So on to number four, multiple agenda item comments. Comments by members of the public who have submitted multiple speaker cards and want to speak on all items for up to 5 minutes at one time can choose to speak during the multiple agenda item comment period. Members of the public who choose to speak during the multiple agenda items period will be given the opportunity to also speak during general public comments. So you have 5 minutes to speak on agenda items that are on the agenda, a total of 5 minutes, and each, and then when public comment period comes, you may speak another minute on what, on when each item comes up, you may speak a minute on that particular item. So, Mr. Previn, do you wish to speak on number four, and please specify the items that
well,
you are going to
Well, I'm going to specify the subjects. We can apply them as we did earlier with Mr. Schaefer, who is watching very closely. But
okay.
I would request, as you pointed out, that the respect piece just be firmly in place because the time lapsed quickly.
Okay.
And if I get interrupted, it pushed off my point. It's very hard.
Okay. So and the items that we looked at are five. Hold on a minute. Let me just be clear on it. Are five, six, nine, and 10.
I also said that if it's contained in one of the other items, the subjects that I shared with you, that I would be happy to check that box as well.
Yeah, but
so that Schaefer can rest easy.
I think we did it ahead of time. I think that's how we picked these items, because what you had mentioned, we were come under 5, 6, 9, and 10.
My point, which I will reiterate quietly, was that the minutes contained the subjects for sure that I wanted to speak about. So that's one of the items.
We also pointed out
that in item 9, elections. So let's move forward, because they're not that interesting, the comments, and they are brief. So I would say let's take them and let's move forward. So that the esteemed commissioner from
Maggie Derrick,
yes, can move forward as well, because she was frustrated by the delay, and so am I. So whenever you're ready, I'll begin. And I apologize once again to everybody for any confusion about my lack of clarity. I just would like to address the Neighborhood Council Board of Commissioners. So you tell me when to go, and I will begin.
Okay, let me just get my notepad together here. And you may be interrupted if you're not following the agenda.
Let's not go negative. Let's stay positive. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. My name is Eric Previn. I'm from Studio City. I am on a neighborhood council, the Studio City Neighborhood Council, but I am not speaking on behalf of the neighborhood council. I'm speaking in my own capacity as myself. I am a writer, and I do have an article coming out this evening on City Watch about homelessness, and I encourage you all to look for it. We need some alternative suggestions, and this was one that my brother and I took. So it's also worth noting that on January 18th, Councilmember Krikorian is having a homeless summit out in the valley. And it's also worth noting that in the days just in advance of January 18th, on January 16th, and then the day after January 19th, the HHH committee is going to be, unfortunately, rushing some exciting news past even the HHH Citizen Oversight Committee and past any council committee at all, because there's simply no time. We found out about this last week at the HHH Civil and Oversight meeting, and it is to get $50 million in cap and trade help and $50 million in HHH funding for a project, but we don't know anything about the project. Now, obviously, for my money, that is a problem, because I would like to know about these things and be excited about something that we can understand. The technical detail is that transit-related projects will qualify for this cap and trade money, because if you're in an area near a metro, they're willing to give you some help to put affordable housing in that spot or permanent support. So I think it's great, but we need to know where, because obviously the details matter to neighborhood councils, as we all know, being connected one way or the other to those neighborhood councils. So that would be my comment on homelessness, other than the simple plaintive plea with our leaders to do something. You know, I'm tired of the op-eds saying we need to be patient, it's taking forever, because there are people lying all over the place. We have a hepatitis outbreak. I just really think we need some out-of-the-box solutions, and people should be bringing those forward if they can. Regarding outreach, I was excited earlier because I saw that general manager, Grace Liu, is here. And outreach really is something that the Neighborhood Council is, it's DNA. It's in our DNA to bring out to the communities and take back from the communities information. And yet, unfortunately, we are having selective recognition of projects happening around the place. The example that came up in the minutes last time was the Prop K project in our neighborhood, where we had no outreach whatsoever, and a giant city project that's going to possibly cost, if it does not become either defunded or doesn't get its funding, $10 million worth of activity on a little neighborhood, and they don't have any knowledge about it. So this is a real bummer, because I believe that the whole idea when Janice Hahn and the others put this thing together was to make sure that we're making those tributaries of information open and flowing. And unfortunately, in my neighborhood, where a guy like me who tries hard, it's still not flowing if somebody says don't let it flow. So that's a big red flag and a big problem. And we should get a Bill of Rights, as I said last time, and I'd like an update from somebody at some point, if whether or not that's a good idea, to have a set of rules that indicate if that you must, as part of a neighborhood council using the city resources, share information of certain types. And that could be all types. Or, you know, we could define that as a group. I don't need to define it myself. I think that everybody wants to share information with their community. And finally, I just have to hang my head in sorrow for the many members of these communities who participate from the outside, who are not the neighborhood council, who face guys like Mr. Schaffer, who is doing an excellent job. I just want to say on behalf of Mr. Schaffer, who's a tireless servant, and nobody's done more for this program than he has. But when people are on the outside trying to make a comment and they have to face a labyrinthian confusion, you know, they feel, boy, I'd love to get this guy unelected and get in myself. But now, unfortunately, we're going to have to wait an entire year. Because, as you know, and I brought it up into a quiet room, because nobody other than me seems to feel this way, me and the many people on the outside, that to re-elect ourselves for one additional term based on the fact that nobody really objects and, I don't know, we don't want to waste any money on an election, do we, is a terrible, terrible abnegation of our responsibilities to our constituents. Because this is what we are. If we do not represent what they want and who they are, what are we doing? We're just little petty tyrants who push around somebody else's agenda. I thought that the whole idea was get elected, bring your voice to the people, let those people bring you into office, and then start affecting change or reform or status quo. I love my life in Studio City, and I'm sure many of us love our lives in our neighborhood councils, but change and the option to change your leadership is central to what it means to be in a democracy, I think. So with that, I would say good luck. You have a big agenda today, and I appreciate your listening as always. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, we need to we need to approve the minutes of the meeting from October 16th, 2017. Has anybody had a chance? I mean, has everybody had a chance to go over them, look at them, make any changes, want any amendments, any corrections? I'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes if we have no concerns. There's been a motion to approve the minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Moved by Commissioner Schaefer, seconded by Commissioner Regalado to accept the minutes. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Minutes are approved. Okay. We have, or do we? Do we have, do we have any representatives here from the mayor's office, Los Angeles City Council, or any city representatives from any of the departments that want to make any comments? You know, city clerk is later. No? Okay. Okay. Budget advocates? Any news, verbal updates, representatives from the Los Angeles Neighborhood Council, budget advocates?
Glenn Bailey and Brian Allen, budget advocates.
So I just want to confirm that the regional budget day has been confirmed, the date for Saturday, January 20th. We were able to confirm that the Empowerment Congress Summit is going to be the previous Saturday, January 13th at USC. So that was the big, I think, one of the questions from the last meeting. So
what's going to be the
26th Annual Empowerment Congress Summit. This time they're focusing on a gubernatorial candidate session. But there's a lot of neighborhood councils from the city as well as outside the city that participate. I think there's, 1,000 or 2,000 people. There's a lot of people that participate in that. So we didn't want to conflict with that event. And we were, so that was the delay, was confirming when that was. So we are looking at the usual, I think, 6 locations throughout the city for the regional budget day. We're in that process right now as we speak, hopefully by tomorrow. But we're really looking for locations that have, that may have Wi-Fi, although we have a plan B, which is to record messages and then just play them, just show them for a recorded message so that we can get the same message from the mayor or the controller, whoever it is that we're wanting for the budget day, that all 6 of the gatherings can receive. That's the plan. And then after we have those presentations, then we break up for stakeholder input on budget issues, which would build upon that process from the annual budget day from June. That's
all I have. The budget advocates have recently approved an extension of their terms to 2 years. We've changed the bylaws so that budget advocates will serve for 2 years. There's a little difficulty in implementing that. As I think about it, there will be some difficulty in trying to make sure that that is seamless. But that is a desire that we have in order to ensure that a first-year budget advocate who doesn't have a lot of knowledge has a chance to learn before they become responsible as chairs. And I think... there's one other thing that the budget advocates are now embarking on, and I'm kind of in the forefront of that, unfortunately. Well, fortunately. And that is that we're taking a look at homelessness from a different perspective. We're trying to identify why the homeless keep coming and why they are homeless. Why has this become a problem? We're not so concerned as to the efforts that are going on to try to assist them. That's obvious that we have to do something, but we also have to stop it. We have to find a way to identify why is it happening, and if we can, and I think the city and the county, the state, the federal government, all should be looking at this, but it is important to at least me as a budget advocate to try to understand why is this happening. What can we do to ensure that future generations of individuals do not have an automatic path to homelessness? And that seems to be, in my mind at least, what's happening. So we're taking a look at it, trying to figure out, at least have some meetings on it and try and figure out what we can come up with as to some reasons.
Question, Commissioner Atkinson first. Then I open it up to the rest of the commissioner. 2 questions. If you change the term of the budget advocates to 2 years instead of 1 year, does that mean the budget representatives stay as budget representatives also, and that we don't have to have that budget meeting except for every 2 years, you know, that meeting where we choose the budget advocates?
The natural outgrowth of a 2-year change will be to have staggered terms. So there will be people who will stay on, and there will be people who will not stay on for various reasons. It is not the budget advocate's responsibility or authority to tell an NC how long a budget rep is to be a budget rep. If an NC decides that they don't want this budget rep, who is an advocate, well, then that advocate drops off unless they're reappointed by that NC. But that's what I was meaning by. There's still a few things to work out on that. But it is not the budget advocate's position.
So you still have to work on the budget anyway every year. So if the if a neighborhood council wants to keep their budget reps, they don't have to have an election every year, in other words, to pick their budget reps?
Correct.
But
so different point of view. So as Brian indicated, they serve at the pleasure of the neighborhood council. But right now, the rules are that it's a one-year term from budget day to budget day.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a bylaws committee that's looking at revising the bylaws, so that may be tweaked. So that's just the way it is right now.
Okay.
But they can still change at any time.
Right.
So
we still have a little smoothing out to do.
Yeah.
Second question regarding your homeless issue. About, you know, why it occurs. What does that have to do with the budget advocates? I mean, because it seems to me you're looking for cost savings, how to spend, you know, my issue with homelessness is, you know, I think the city's spending too much money on big housing and they ought to do smaller housing, but that's just an idea. So why does the budget advocates have to understand why homelessness happens? It seems to me the issue is out there, so what to do about it?
The issue is out there, and we are going to spend lots of money, to say it politely, to try to address the issue. The city is going to have to spend money for years, and by trying to identify why it's happening, if we can come up with some impact to that, we would be able to affect the budget, because that would mean that the potential is there that the budget can be affected by the fact that we find answers that will eliminate the future. We're under no misconception that we can eliminate homelessness. That is not what we're trying to do. We'd all love to, but that's not what our anticipation is. But we'd like to slow it down, if not bring it into something that we could consider an acceptable norm. And unfortunately, we're not there today. We are growing every year, and there is no end in sight at the moment. And unless we can arrest that, our budget's going to continue to grow. The money that we're throwing at it today is going to be a pittance to what we're going to throw at it tomorrow. So that's why we're looking at it.
Well, just one point, since I don't have enough time in my schedule to come to budget advocate meetings.
We'd love to have you.
You need to look at the budget and how money is spent on the building of housing and how money can be saved in that respect.
We all agree.
Any other, Mr. Ricolato?
I think I understood you to say that you're looking for the reasons why people are becoming homeless. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So if we go to some of the homeless agencies out there like LASA and PATH and Harbor Interfaith down in our part of town, I think it's pretty obvious, well, to us, we had a homeless task force down in the harbor area, that there are numerous reasons why homelessness occurs. The issue is once a person is homeless, there is a long delay between the homeless incident and getting them back into some kind of housing and training this and that. It appears that we probably know why people are becoming homeless. We just aren't quick enough to get them out of that situation.
With everyone that I've talked to so far, and I'm embarking on a very difficult array of ideas to talk to people, but of everyone I've talked to right now, no one has agreed that they have an answer for why there is homeless. They all have, as we all know, there are lots of reasons that we can point to as to what the last cause or the current cause of them being homeless is. They had a medical problem that ate their savings up. They lost their home. They are on drugs. They have mental illness, various and sundry things. All right. But why did those occur? Why did somebody get on drugs? Why did somebody not have the ability to stay employed? There are a lot of questions behind the scenes that aren't being asked, and they're not being understood. And unless we understand them, there is no chance of arresting this into the future. What if, and I don't want to make this a political statement, so I'm going to try to be careful here, but what if the policies of the last 40 years, governmental policies of the last 40 years, which may have caused people to be unemployed because it was easier to be unemployed than it was to get a job? Or what about the educational system where maybe they didn't provide the ability to be employed? What about the fact that there are no more shops in schools? Maybe they don't have a trade capability. There are many things that I can think of that could have an impact on this over a long range of time. And over that range of time, maybe people have not had the ability to stay employed because they haven't been guided into being able to be employed. If that's the case, how do we change that? And that's why I personally believe that this has to be looked at in a much more critical path and ask the question.
And if I can just follow up question? If I can ask, how do you propose the budget advocates to be able to address those larger issues that really in some cases don't even lie at the doorstep of city government?
In the long run, the budget advocates can't, because it isn't an organization that is capable of going that far. But it is something that we have opened the door to asking questions. And if we can come up with a suggestion that will get us there through other sources, maybe a nonprofit, maybe some other things, we can open that door to addressing that issue. It's a much bigger concept than any one of our departments can handle at the moment. But it is a question that has to be opened up, and if we can find a way, then we'll turn it over to that way. But at the moment, it's a passion to try to answer, because we know that in the long run, it's going to affect us negatively if we don't get an answer. That's all.
Thank you.
Commissioner?
First question, when is it that you expect this 2-year term to take effect?
I don't think we have an absolute answer on that, but I believe it's effective almost immediately.
So those people...
Actually, the motion was that our parliamentarian would check with city attorney to find out if that was a... This happened on Saturday, so you're getting information from 2 days ago, to see if that is possible or if it is implemented at budget day in June.
I was going to say, so that would mean that those that people voted for a 1-year term would suddenly be doing a 2-year term. Is that right?
Essentially, it would be the same thing that has just happened with the NCs they were extended.
And that's a little different because the city is passing an ordinance that makes us do that, okay? That's the difference. Because I know people who were looking forward to running for budget advocate at the next budget day, which they expected to be this year at some point. They've looked at it, they've gone through it. I know in my own neighborhood council, there's at least one person that wants to become a budget advocate. The only way we could do that would be to, well, neither of our budget advocates are, our budget reps are advocates this time. So I'm just curious as to this midstream change.
I do agree that there is some potential problems to solve. I mentioned that out front. However, the overlying concern is the ability of a budget advocate to be effective. The city needs effective budget advocates, and in order to achieve that, they have to have some experience. And that experience can only come one of two ways, being a budget advocate or being a rep and being involved. And I can tell you from a personal standpoint that the very first year I was a budget advocate, I was not as effective as I could have been and probably should have been. And that's not a fair thing to do to the budget advocates. They need to be able to ensure that the people that come on board are given a chance to learn. And it is not easy. It is a more difficult job than most people think.
So then how do you stagger it without giving some budget advocates who are there now a 4-year term?
I don't think we've gone through that analysis yet, and I don't think that I see a 4-year term coming. We'd have to give a lot of thought to that to answer that question.
If your goal is to have experienced people, at the end of a 2-year period, you're going to have everybody reelected or brand new people elected, so you'll have a whole group of new people. Unless you stagger it now and give some budget advocate's a two-year term, and some a four-year term, or a three-year at least. I'm not sure how you do that.
Well, they could be staggered every year. There could be some that would be for,
I understand that. I'm talking about the people that will get two-year terms now. If your goal is to always have at least somebody with a minimum of 1 year, then you're going to have to take a number of those and give them an extra year to 3 years, so you've got a number of experienced people and only elect one half the number of budget advocates 2 years. Do you understand that?
Yeah, but that's not, but that it was max of 2 years. That was the proposal. That was approved, subject to city attorney's review of the as they always review our bylaws changes. And if the city attorney says this has to be implemented in conjunction with budget day in June, then probably the way to effectuate that would be that, then we'd have to maybe revisit whether it's everyone's 2 years. But I think when Brian is talking about naturally occurring, I'm not sure that is his exact wording, but we have a number of budget advocates during the course of the year that do not continue. Either they voluntarily resign, they are no longer in that position, they're no longer eligible, or they come within our excessive absent policy and they're removed. So there are a number of new budget, even between last June and now, there have been a number of new budget advocates that have come on.
But what I'm saying is that either these people stay on for 2 years, and at the end of this two-year time, you hold an election and all seats are open. And then you have to somehow designate which of those elected will be 1 year and which will be 2 years. Or you have to figure out how you're going to extend some of them to 3 years and have an election for the empty seats in 2 years. Otherwise, you could end up with 100% brand new people. It's quite possible.
Anything is possible. But the way we have seen it and the way we've looked at it so far is that on an annual basis, about one-third of the budget advocates get changed one way or another. They either, as Glenn said, they either drop out, they're removed, but they are gone. They get reelected, not the rest of the, if this is implemented, those who are budget advocates this year would stay on for one additional year. Those that need to be reelected, need to be elected at that point because they have left as budget advocates, would be elected. Those, we would have elections for those only.
I understand. So let's say you elect one-third, okay? Now the next time you have to elect two-thirds because the people who remained for the second year, they're gone. Now they've got to go.
Or 50% because maybe some will drop out.
Maybe. Okay. I think you're going to have to work on that.
We agree with that, but it is a natural situation we have to sort out.
Interrupt this really.
Okay, let me get on to something more reasonable.
On budget advocates?
Yes.
Okay.
Very quick.
I have one question,
yeah,
and then you can do you ask a question? Cause isn't it? I'm asking the city attorney. I mean, we get information from the budget advocates, and we can give our opinion, but we really have no jurisdiction over the budget advocates, do we? I mean, so they're going to deal with their bylaws any way they can, and hopefully we give you some ideas or something. So we don't need to spend too much time on their bylaws.
The last time we did a lot of changes, like especially the grievance procedure, the city attorney did review and gave comments to us.
One last thing. Go ahead.
I applaud your idea with regard to homelessness, but two things. One, you may be trying to reinvent the wheel. Number two, I think that a lot of you, unless you have certain expertise, are going to be totally and completely over your heads. You're going to be out of your league. I was in law enforcement for 35 years, and things like drug use. There's so many different reasons for things like that. There's people who end up in prison and come out, and what happens to them in trying to find jobs. There's economic homeless, which is becoming the biggest segment of homelessness in the city of Los Angeles, possibly the county of Los Angeles, people who have no drug problem, they have no mental illness, they just can't afford $2,500 a month for rent, and that's why they're living in their cars and such. There are agencies out there who have been studying this for years. My question is, how are you going to, if you know, go about attempting to accomplish this?
At this point in the game, we have identified this as a question that we would like to address. We do not have a plan for it at the moment, and that's something I'm working on. But I will say this, there is no plan with the city to resolve it either. We passed very large dollars of bonds for an issue that we only have the ability to throw money at. We don't have a full range plan. You can look at all the documentation with the city, including the large book of why, what conditions these homeless people are in, and there is no plan. And we've said that as budget advocates from the very start of this, before the measure HHH was approved, that there is no plan. There's no general plan. If we aren't going to look at it and everybody else is not looking at it, then is it better for us to ignore it, or is it better for us to at least take a shot?
Well, I would disagree with you. I think there's a lot of people trying to figure out a lot of these issues. Perhaps you could seek them out and use their expertise.
I would completely agree with that.
Thank you very much. Gary had a comment on number 7, what we were just talking about, budget advocates.
Thank you. I'll try to make this brief. I appreciate the discussion that Leonard tried to bring up regarding how is this going to implement. I don't know from the city attorney's point of view whether it can be made retroactive to the previous June to get this thing rolling for a budget advocate term limits. I know that Glenn had tried to implement, it wasn't accepted by the advocates, even numbered regions versus odd numbered regions, and that would split it 50-50.
One of our commissioners left for a minute, but you can finish your comment.
Commissioner Eli Lippman has arrived as well, so we still have quorum. Thank you.
Pardon?
Commissioner Lippman arrived at 1:45. I'm sorry.
And one of our commissioners just left for
1:43.
A break. Should be right back.
Perfect. I just want to note that for the record.
Should we mention Ms. Derek Kuros left it 1 minute to? I think that clock is wrong.
The clock is an hour.
1 minute to 2. I mean, 5 minutes to 2, so she should be right back. All right. I'm sorry. We just had to make that
I
legal.
Fully understand. Thank you. where I would go beyond what Glenn had attempted to do Saturday with odd-numbered regions and even-numbered regions, which I think would help Leonard's questioning, I wanted to go beyond that, which makes the bylaws a little more complex. But I think not unreasonably, difficult, is that, for example, there are 3 advocates per region. If you're in a even-numbered region on even-numbered years, 2 of your advocates get replaced. But that would always leave 1. On an odd-numbered year, you replace the 1 advocate and the 2 even-numbered stay. And that would carry in. It was my concern to have a continuity of mentorship within regions, not just every other region. So that was my point.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, that was on number 7. Budget advocates had some interesting stuff today. Number 8, we are now back at general public comments, and we have Laura Al or Lana Al. Come on up. You're next on the list. Say the name again. Oh, I have it. Okay.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Can you hear me? Earlier this spring, I reached out to the neighborhood councils and did an alliance tour related to a citywide project on public work services. The project's objective is to uncover ways that raise accountability and service delivery for constituents. So I wanted to briefly come to this meeting today and briefly share some comments and insights from the survey. I'm happy to come back and give a full-fledged presentation at a future meeting. The survey consisted of 6 questions, including the opportunity for constituents to rate the most common infrastructure services across 3 different departments. It also included questions around which services would constituents like to improve first, and the global state of cleanliness, ease of walking, travel, et cetera, for Los Angeles. The highest rated services, based on constituent feedback, were recycling, trash collection, and bulky item pickup. The least, or lowest rated services, rather, were sidewalk repair, weed abatement, and tree trimming. LA 311 was cited as the most improved service by both constituents and bids who also had a chance to complete the survey. Although constituents appreciated the LA 311 improvement, the level of responsiveness to constituent requests scored low. 100% said it was rated poor or fair on a 4-point scale. If constituents could choose which services to improve first from the list of 25 infrastructure services, the top 3 were sidewalk repair, tree trimming, and street repair. 100% rated the cleanliness of Los Angeles as poor or fair on a 4-point scale. Overwhelmingly, respondents follow city Facebook accounts compared to Twitter accounts for communication purposes. And although some respondents did contact their council office to report an issue with city services, residents by far used 311 more often at 100%. So very brief insights into the survey, but like I said, I'm more than happy to come back at a future meeting and do a full presentation.
Where does the survey go?
The survey will be released as part of a larger citywide project and evaluation on the state of infrastructure services in LA.
Seems to me a copy of that survey ought to go to the budget advocates.
We did go.
Okay.
Yeah. They've completed the survey as well.
Does anybody have any questions about this short survey that she reported on? No? Okay. Thank you very much. Glenn? Where did Glenn go? Oh, okay. Glenn, you under general public comment? You'll be next.
Glenn Bailey speaking as an individual. Unfortunately, this has to do with the commission's policies and a particular neighborhood council, which is public record because they're discussing it too. Reseda Neighborhood Council has violated since the beginning of this fiscal year multiple times the agenda posting requirements, and most recently they have a regular board and Commissioner Schaefer, actually I copied the whole commission this morning. Commissioner Schaefer has been copied on some of the communications since July. They have a regular monthly board meeting scheduled tonight, which in order to get the agenda in to meet the Brown Act requirements and also the agendas, the commission's agenda posting policy, would have had been submitted and posted by 7 p.m. on Friday. They did neither. You were sent copy of a photo at the posting location, which happened to be their office window, 3 p.m. on Saturday the following day, where nothing had been posted, hanging up on the hangers. They instead have decided to call a special meeting for tonight, which in the past city attorney has advised that in and of itself, to get around the 72-hour requirement is not adequate. If you want to call a special meeting in conjunction with your regular meeting to consider an additional item, you can do so. And even that they screwed up on because they didn't send the e-blast out to their board and to the stakeholders until 8:11 last night. So that was less than even the 24 hours. As of this morning, they have not posted it on their website. In fact, if you go to their website, you'll see they have posted no agendas since August 21st. They're woefully behind on their minutes. But that's another story. But I just want to read from your policy number 2014-01.1, revised August 18, 2014, item number 11, number 10. If a neighborhood council is found to be in a violation of this policy 3 times within the current fiscal year, the board and any non-board member committee chair shall be required to take additional training as may be determined by the department. If after receiving additional training, the neighbor council is again found to be in violation of this policy during the current fiscal year, then exhaustive efforts to remedy this situation, including the loss of funding, may be taken by the department pursuant to the citywide plan. It seems to me, given this is, I think, about the sixth violation since the beginning of this fiscal year, it seems, and this is a board meeting where they have many thousands of dollars on the agenda tonight to consider. It seems to me the time is now for, number one, for the city attorney to shut this meeting down tonight and for the department to require this additional training. Thank you.
Not necessarily to Glenn, but to the city attorney or to the department, because it seems to me when agendas aren't filed, doesn't the staff in charge of that particular neighborhood council, you know, let the folks know when the deadline is, if they don't do it, that they have to cancel their meeting?
Mike Fong with the Department of Neighbor Empowerment. As a normal protocol, we do inform the neighborhood councils that regularly you have to post within 72 hours, you have to post on the website, the location and all that, so as a matter of good practice. So we'll circle back on the Reseda Neighborhood Council issue.
So if it isn't done, like, for 6 months, how do you, when does the penalty kick in?
We'll look into this issue. We just reprised it this morning on that email, and we'll talk to our Valley Team Operations, and we'll circle back with our Valley Team.
So are you familiar with this particular issue?
I heard about it this morning when I saw the email on this.
Oh, okay, so you just are... So it should be handled expeditiously then?
We'll look into it expeditiously, yes.
Okay. So I have a question. So the meeting for tonight, is that on or is that off? Or is it formal? Is it not, you know, I mean, since everybody knows about it and it's an illegal meeting, do you just stop it?
Well, obviously if it's illegal, it doesn't go forward, but this meeting in place and it's being handled.
Okay. Because if they got money that they're going to vote out tonight, they shouldn't be voting out any money. But, of course, that has to get okayed anyway if they say they want to spend some money on something, right? Yeah. Okay. All right. I was just a little curious about how the system works. Because if we have rules and then the neighborhood council goes for 6 months and doesn't follow the rules, I don't know why we don't find that out. If we have staff that is supervising those neighborhood councils, then they should be keeping up with the... They should be keeping up with neighborhood councils are doing and not doing. Because I know that a couple of neighborhood councils, when they do their agenda and post it, they also send it to the Dunn staff person for that particular neighborhood council so they can keep up with it.
Yes.
So maybe that should be a general rule or a general policy that you guys look at to be sure that you're keeping up with the agendas.
We do review the agendas, so we'll look into this particular issue.
Obviously.
We will look into this particular issue. Thank you.
Okay. You know, it. Everybody knows that I always complain about bureaucracy, and so I don't mean to be contentious with the department because they have been very helpful on a lot of issues, but it just seems to me if we have a rule and then we pass it, we have a policy and then we pass it, and then the department doesn't enforce it, and it's a little irritating. Because it's a simple rule to post agendas. I'm amazed that somebody that's the secretary of the organization can't go and put the doggone thing on the website. I just don't understand it. And I don't understand us waiting 6 months to let it go and to say, oh, we just found out about it. We're going to take care of it expeditiously. It's not expeditiously, even if you take care of it by tomorrow. So, anyway, that's just my comment. Does anybody else have anything to ask or anything? All right. Go ahead, Mr. Glenn.
Just as a general comment, looking back in my email, I received a copy of the special agenda meeting 8:11 last night in my email. And checking yesterday on their website, the last I saw was a July agenda. And when I just checked their website just now, it says under construction, even though it has a calendar on the right side. Yeah, So I find it unusual. I do read their agendas for content. Check on those. I did get Mr. Bailey's email with regards to no posting.
Thank you. Mr. Previn?
Thank you. It's Eric Previn. And I'll speak in the general public comment in support of the budget advocates' ideas to look at the source of homelessness, because, as I think they said, and I'm not going to belabor the point, there's not enough being done. Though somebody pointed out there are a lot of people working on it, there is not. And any functional thinkers are welcome, quite frankly, because an idea can come from anywhere. That's what I've always believed. Agendas, on the other hand, cannot come from anywhere, and they have to come from people who are designated to post them. And I agree with, again, I think Mr. Bailey, whoever is bringing forward the concerns about Reseda, but sometimes the fault is not of those who are trying to have the meeting, but in fact of those who are in the chain of posting command. And there's a group called Web Corner that is a neighborhood council approved funk group. Who don't even really touch our stuff. It's all handled by our secretary. And so when there's a problem, the fingers go pointing at Web Corner and they protect the secretary. It's just not very streamlined or effective. And everybody agrees 72 hours for a general meeting in advance has to be posted at the locations and 24 hours for a special meeting. And even though it may not seem like a good area, there's no restrictions on what you could have a special meeting about. You just have to post it and notify the community, mostly. And creating, as this Board of Commissioners has done, a series of other things that you have to do per the commissioners is not just extra legal, it's inappropriate. We should make our meetings easy to notice to people so that they're attended properly. But we have, once again, the same kind of problem goes on where little groups decide what they're doing and stay in power for a very long time, and it becomes problematic, quite frankly. And that's why we see diminishing numbers, and we try to put a good face on it, but we can't, unfortunately. I would like to say, and leave on a nicer positive note, that the Studio City Neighborhood Council, in conjunction with the Friends of the Studio City Library, had a summer writing contest and got over 45 entries into the contest. It was lovely. Little program, children, teens, and adults all participated through the library, and the winners were announced very recently. So we're very pleased that it went so well and that it was the first, hopefully, of many summer writing contests. And I would encourage other neighborhood councils to think about same, because it's really a great way to engage constituents in a way other than, you know, sanitation, law enforcement, and that kind of stuff. Finally, I will just say in the last 20 seconds, preferential parking districts have been green-lit in Studio City by our council leadership. This is presenting controversy beyond belief, because all the neighbors know about it, but none of the people who will be impacted on the boulevard do. So we need to raise awareness about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Item number 9 is the general manager's report.
Thank you, Madam President, and good afternoon, commissioners and members of the public. Mike Fong with the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment. On behalf of General Manager Gracie Liu, a few updates here today. For Civic University 2.0, we're currently still registering participants for our Civic University 2.0 in partnership with the Mayor's Office and the Pat Brown Institute. Sessions will be held on January 8th, January 22nd, January 29th, and February 5th here at Los Angeles City Hall. Encourage neighbor councils to submit names of participants, and registration closes on December 15th. Secondly, we have also the subdivision policy and the application process has just opened up on Friday. So if any neighbor councils would like more information on that process or advocates in the community, that information is now online and was in the GM newsletter this past Friday. Thirdly, I'd like to bring up Armando Ruiz and Corey from the Department of Neighbor Empowerment. We just submitted the department's budget, and Armando and his team did an amazing job in preparing the budget, and each of you should have a copy here today. And Armando and Corey will provide an update on the department's budget request.
Good afternoon. Armando Ruiz, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment. I'm joined with Corey Paraga, the manager for the Administrative Services section. First of all, thank you very much for your support in the past year. I'm pleased to present the budget for the proposal for 2018 and 19. Just wanted to give out a couple of highlights, if you would, and if you have questions, obviously you can refer to the budget or let me know and I'll be happy to answer as is necessary. I do also want to point out that our budget proposal is available online at our website, empowerrelay.org/budget-proposal-18-19. So this budget proposal is really just us, the department, continuing to support neighborhood councils in any way possible administratively and providing capacity building and just really trying to achieve the full coverage of every neighborhood council meeting, focusing on things like increasing community impact statements and just looking for in terms of internally developing process improvements and making sure that we're efficient in the way we operate, as well as using technology and innovation to kind of solve problems and make sure that we're providing access for neighborhood council board members and stakeholders to our site and to our processes that we govern. This year's budget, we're asking for $4.8 million, roughly, which is an increase of about 17 positions and a $1.9 million increase over the baseline of this year's budget. The highlights include for our neighborhood council field operations, continuing the development of online training platforms for things like the funding training, the budget, the ethics training, and other trainings that would help the neighborhood councils run their meetings, board members understand those issues. Also, we're partnering with the Department on Disability to do ADA site assessments of all the meeting locations. For elections, obviously, we're coming on to 2019 election year, so we're asking for additional monies to launch a citywide election campaign to outreach to as many stakeholders as we can. We're looking at demographics and several other strategies to be able to reach out. We also are requesting to create an Office of Civic Engagement, which would train city departments to engage effectively with the community, with the stakeholders, with the neighborhood councils, and increase the public participation. We also want to build out our administrative support. We're asking for a general manager and a couple of assistant general manager, and some administrative support positions to make sure we're keeping up with requests that come into the department for accounting and different processes like bylaw amendments, et cetera. We also want to build out outreach for emergency preparedness issues, partnering with the Department of Emergency Management to help neighborhood councils develop emergency plans, jumpstart plans, and emergency bins. So we've set that out with asking for some staffing and just some funding to help that go on. And lastly, we're asking for a position to help as a liaison for various city initiatives like homelessness, the cannabis regulation outreach, et cetera, things that are coming down the pipeline. So that's the end of my report, but I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
I have one question.
Yes.
At least one question. So I'm looking at the performance metrics.
Yes.
And I see a lot of things that are being done. This has always been a big complaint of mine. Where is the topic that would cover what kind of outreach the department does to help these neighborhood councils get more people to come to their neighborhood council meetings?
So what I can tell you about these performance metrics is that the way this budget proposal is structured is it's usually tied to specific requests that we're making. It doesn't mean that these are the only metrics that the department tracks in terms of our work and what matters to our internal operations in terms of outreach. There are several other metrics and systems that we use to track, you know, outreach, effective outreach, demographics, things that we're looking at. Probably someone more suited to answer that question specifically, I would say. But these metrics specifically speak to the request that we were asked, that we're making in this budget.
You mean asked by the city? When you say
we're tying it to our specific ask for more staffing and funding for these programs that we're proposing. Okay. Yes.
Well, that's an unimpressive answer to me, because it seems to me that outreach is one of the most important, should be one of the most important aspects.
Agreed.
Of the neighborhood council movement.
Sure.
And I never see enough, I see a plenty of outreach to get out the vote, and I even saw it in this metric. A lot of work and hiring to get to be sure that people come out and vote for, you know, and vote for their officers, and that and that even recruitment is done.
Sure.
For people to run.
Sure.
And so then people show up to vote, and then you go to the neighborhood council meeting after the election, and there's 10 people in the room.
Sure.
And nobody seems to care about that.
So what
I want to say, nobody cares about that but me, but there must be somebody that cares about it besides me.
What I would
and it's not anywhere in a budget, and it seems to me there should be staffing requests.
Yes.
To help with outreach.
What we do have is the request for the Office of Civic Engagement, which ties in both to helping the city agencies reach out to the public, so that there's an element of staffing that we ask for to train other city agencies to reach out to the public, but at the same time that group would also conduct outreach about the neighborhood council system.
I think that's great. And,
yes.
I do like the department, I do like that Office of Civic Engagement, but I'm specifically talking about our own neighborhood councils that we have jurisdiction over, that the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment has to deal with. How do you help them do outreach to get more members? You know, as other agencies can do and say what they want to about doing outreach.
Sure.
But I'm talking about the neighborhood councils.
Sure.
And how to get people to come to their meetings.
Sure, absolutely.
Maybe you think other departments can do it, but only a neighborhood council can get people to their own meetings. So, but anyway, that's just my opinion.
Oh, no.
And we just, you know, I just wanted to make that comment, and I'm going to make it every time I see a budget.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't show anything on outreach.
No, absolutely. So to follow up on Armando's point, Mike Fong with the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment, if you look at pages 46 and 47, there's a budget request for additional staff.
Page
46.
Okay.
For additional staff for outreach, including elections, communication, citywide outreach, and that's something that the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners is highly focused on. So we hear you loud and clear, and we really want we'd love to earn your support in this journey to advocate for these asks.
And they get hired for elections, and then we don't see them for outreach. But that's all right.
No, it's elections and outreach. We'll
questions?
Go through there. I'm trying to follow up on your point there.
Commissioner Schaefer has a question.
Just one moment. I just suggest that perhaps a copy. Is a copy of this provided?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And I've been asked to inquire of this. You may have to come back at a later time and let us know. You mentioned, and I believe it's the same request as last year, 4 employees to be split between EMD and the Department for Emergency Preparedness.
For the emergency preparedness, we are asking for 2 employees on our side.
And 2 on EMD side?
That will, I'm not too sure. The way the budget was, proposals were structured last year, there was a different collaborative element.
Okay.
Where we literally put together a budget. Yes, but this year they kind of simplified it, and they said if you're working with another department, go ahead and just ask for the positions you need.
Okay.
And that's what we did.
Here's the question that was asked. Proposal shows salaries.
Yes.
And I know that the city has its own formulation for benefits that accompany those salaries.
Yes.
And that the only thing the department asks for is the salaries. They don't bother themselves or busy themselves with the benefits, because there's formulas for all different employees and such.
That is correct.
The question is, can we get an approximation of the benefits? In other words, what would be the percentage increase? Last year, the salary for 4 was something like $195,000. I don't know what you're asking for this time, but they'd like to know before they start supporting it, which I think we'd like to do, is what is approximately the final valuation of those employees?
And this is specifically for the emergency management?
For the emergency preparedness position. Yes, because the alliance that I facilitate, that question was raised. If we go out to neighborhood councils and say, support this, and they say, what's it going to cost the city? We need to know approximately what it's going to cost the city other than just the salary.
If I can point you to the page, I believe I can give you the answer right here and now.
Is it in there this time?
I believe so. Page 32, request A, Neighborhood Council Emergency Preparedness Program. The middle table, labeled budget, if you follow about the third column down, right underneath the total, $85,989, right below that is the pension health estimates, right there, $47,000.
Okay, so those are included this year.
Well, in our budget ask is only the $85,000.
Oh, I understand.
But it is considered, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, and okay. Would you explain the applicable cap rate? Okay. Very good. You know, that's what they were wondering, because they wanted to come up with a total figure.
Yes.
As opposed to just a salary figure.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that.
Mr. Vergara?
So I'm going to be putting on my old organizing hat that I've done since the 80s, and the organizing I used to do was to engage community with our various civic partners out there, which include the various local governmental agencies that at the time we dealt with. I think as a neighborhood council, sometimes I feel we are challenged not just to get people to civically engage, but to actually see the fruits of our engagement by being able to see more effective partnerships with city departments, elected officials, and other other entities within our community. And I think the biggest frustration that I have found is the fact that we have a difficult time getting any kind of reciprocal activity coming from some of our city departments. In other words, I'm all for civic engagement, but I'm wondering if there's going to be an equal amount of effort to go in there and help city departments and leadership know that they could look toward their neighborhood councils as good partners in a lot of the things that they do out in the community, because it seems like there are times when our biggest challenge or hurdle is to actually get to talk to someone within our city government departments, especially those that we do a lot with, and they again, they kind of treat us at arm's length. So I'm wondering if there could not be, when we're looking at civic engagement, an opportunity to be able to show that or work on the partnership aspect between and the collaboration aspect between, you know, engaging community and civically engaging our city. So to put it very plainly, I'd love to see as much work go into getting our communities trained to effectively civically engage, but to see how we might be able to draw, you know, closer partnerships with our city department if there is something in that planning or in that capacity to be able to do that.
Yes, thank you. I agree completely. The Office of Civic Engagement that we're proposing is very specifically pointed to doing that. This year we did receive funding for a Fuse Fellow to come in and to develop civic engagement tools, just kind of a toolbox of different strategies and ways that we can begin to train other city agencies to have that meaningful and effective back and forth with the communities, with stakeholders, with the neighborhood councils, with everybody that wants to be engaged with the process. So this budget proposal continues that request. We actually made this request in the prior year as well, but it's such a central focus to our department to be able to have that meaningful back and forth. So we're asking for it again to try and develop it. Yeah.
I just want to say that I completely support that aspect of your ask. I really think it's an important piece of what we do as neighborhood councils to be able to have that partnership with, you know, in and around civic engagement. I really appreciate the fact that you're thinking about that.
Yes, thank you.
Any questions?
Yes, considering that the city may have a budget deficit this year and you're asking for a 70% increase over last year's budget, what would you say is the over-under on getting these budget requests approved?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer. The department, we are one of the smaller departments in the city. We have, over the past several years, been working on improving the way we do things, making sure we're running as efficiently as we can with the limited staff we can. We do have a comparatively small budget compared to many other of the city agencies. So at the same time that we're trying to meet the priorities of the mayor's office and the CAO in terms of making budget asks that go along with what they request, we also recognize that we have needs and goals that we're trying to meet. So we do our best to pare down our processes to make sure that we're running as lean as possible before we ask for additional staffing. And there is a lot of language in here and documentation where we show where we've done process improvements so that we're making sure that the things that we do ask for are as essential as we believe they are. Yeah.
Very briefly, very quickly, two things. One, have you considered outreach with regards to your budget, that is outreach to the neighborhood councils? Because there's nothing that works better with the powers that be than seeing a whole bunch of people supporting somebody's position. So that's one thing I'd suggest you look at. The other is with this civic engagement and outreach, perhaps the department could work with the city attorney's office so that neighborhood councils can understand what they can and cannot do with social media, which is becoming very important for outreach and civic engagement.
Sure. Yes. As to thank you for the idea for outreach through the neighborhood councils. As we do every year, we do meet with the budget advocates and we present our budget and we discuss that as well. You know, we do appreciate the support from any neighborhood councils.
Armando, my suggestion is that you get on the agenda of each of the alliances. You go there, you have a talk with them, you convince them why they should support this, and you get a bunch of neighborhood councils sending in CIS to that 6,000 council file with regards to this.
Thank you. I'll take that into advice.
Any other remarks? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else, Mike, on the general manager's report?
Thank you so much. Nope.
I have one thing for you. Oh, no, that'll come different later.
You have a question,
Mr.
Chief?
No. Okay. It'll come down at the last time.
Oh, later? Okay. Number 10 item, update and discussion on neighborhood council funding by the Office of the City Clerk.
Good afternoon. I'm Patty Santos with the Neighborhood Council Funding Program. I'm actually the ASD division head for the Office of the City Clerk. Andrew and I are going to be giving a report today, but for the most part, we want to let you know that our budget is also in, and we are pretty much on target for budget. Our items that are over do have one item that concerns you, which would be the Neighborhood Council election process. I can't remember the number, but it's enough to cover the online voting if we decide to go that way, and to make sure that you have at the polls voting as well as mail-in ballots. The city clerk will be handling all of the election process this year, or rather in 2019 when the elections happen. That's really it for budget. Do you want to go on with the...
Yes. On a general update of the funding program, currently there is $3.25 million unspent, so we're still, we're actually behind from last year. Initially, we've already, the Neighbor Council overall have spent $770,000. We have a total of $200,000 outstanding, so that leaves us close to about $3.25 million. In terms of our workload, we are processing, to date this fiscal year, we have processed approximately 1,225 requests, and we're completing each request within about 2.1 days. We're finishing each request around that period. For credit card transactions, we've processed close to $300,000 in just credit card transactions, approximately 2,000 transactions up to the current time frame. And on an overall assessment, we did analyze our denials that we're making to a Neighbor Council. They're actually steadily coming down. Initially, we did a lot of denials because people were getting used to the system. We were close to about 35% in denials. We're down to about 23% in denials in terms of requests. Some of them are because we're still getting sometimes duplicate documents, or it's more of a training matter where people are submitting documentation without proper signatures from the treasurers and second signers, sort of nonprofits, for MPG applications. On another aspect of the funding program to update on, we did finish reviewing and creating a training video for non-financial officers. So we do have that. We are finalizing the quiz now to make sure we've covered enough information. So this will be considered sufficient for the training for board members.
So in the budget also, we did request, we are doing a couple things this year in the budget that Dunn would normally do. So since funding is transferred over, we've included those things in our budget. So we've included the annual allocation of $42,000 per neighborhood council as a budget request this year. And also the contract for the, that's the addition in our budget too, the contract. Everyone counts. It will not be in Dunn's budget. It's in our budget this year.
That's the online voting.
Mm-hmm.
Are you asking any dollars for subdivision elections?
Not specifically, no. But we do think that the amount that we've requested will cover to administer as many elections as we need to administer. We are planning on, we've put in enough for the budget, assuming that we're going to have all 97 neighborhood councils. We have different levels of how much money we could be funding regarding elections, but we did request at the highest level, which would assume all 97 neighborhood councils having all of the various types of voting that I had discussed and things like that. So we went with the max budget so that we won't have everyone doing the same thing. And so if we didn't have any subdivisions, we would be able to cover that.
And unfortunately, the person who brought you here because of a complaint is not here today to speak to you, and it had to do with the difficulty in funding the Valley Alliance events, but I think that was solved.
I hope so.
Yeah.
We really worked hard to try to make that work this year.
I think everybody else was able to do it.
Oh, okay. Good.
Some questions? The last time we spoke, you guys said you would allocate resources towards kind of a 1-800 number for concerns. Were you able to do that?
So currently we do have now a general line that all staff from the funding program has connected to. It's 213-978-1058. It's also on our website, clerk.lacity.org, that it's a phone line connected to all members of the Neighbor Council funding staff. So if you call that, any person on our team will be able to respond. We're a total of 12 people. So those, when we have coverage on the phones.
And have people been using that?
Yes, that's the main number that everyone's using as well. We put messages on there if for any reason the system is down, or we're going to be out for 2 hours in training, or whatever may happen, we leave a message on that line as well, and someone's always checking it when we come back.
Great. And then in terms of the denials, you said they were originally 30%, but they've gone down. Do you have sort of a target goal on those?
We're going to assume that about 10% is always generally going to be repeat requests. We're just being denied on that basis. We would like to bring it down as low as possible, but in terms of a target number, we don't have that. We'll have more of that information probably next year after this first year of the system has been completed.
Okay. I mean, I think it's a matter of it's an issue really of training, right? I mean, if people are trained well and understand the system well, then the denials will go down. You would assume, but it's a challenge because, again, we're dealing with – not dealing. We have all volunteers, right? And those volunteers have certain time to do certain things, and then they change a lot. And I found from my history with neighborhood councils is that the job that switches the most tends to be the treasurer because it is such a challenging job that a lot of people just sort of say, this isn't what I signed up for. I think – the message is that training needs to be ongoing and existing. It's good that you have a video, but it will always sort of be something that you should factor into your budget requests is the need for training because there will always be a need to train folks. Now that this thing has been going for a couple of months, are you relatively – I mean, what's your assessment on it? If you could give yourself a grade, what would it be?
Oh, I'd give them an A+, but I think that the system is actually working almost better than expected. I was very nervous. Andrew wanted to take vacation July 1, and I was like, are you crazy? That's the day we're going to start the system. But we let him go, and it worked out, and that seems to be fine. We hit everything off with a bang, and we, like you said, the treasures and the turnover, I think, is what's really an issue right now because we're watching the system work. But the spending rate is not what we would have expected. We thought it was going to just continue to skyrocket because we started off with such a bang. So I would have liked to see a much hardier spending rate now because we're nervous at this point in the year, just like we were last year, that we're going to leave about $1 million or more on the table at the end of the fiscal year. I would have thought that the system, because everyone is saying it's easier to use, it's transparent, we have
right.
folks that are able to see what other neighborhood councils are doing and help us out in the monitoring, that all seems to be going really well. It's just the expenditure rate is...
Didn't
do any better than last year.
I mean, thinking ahead, now that you've sort of gotten your sea legs underneath and worked out any sort of bugs or kinks and starting to run smoothly, then maybe the focus becomes, you know, budget planning, right? You know, how do neighborhood councils plan a little bit better in their budgets so that, A, they're spending their funding down, but, B, they're spending in a way where you're not – everybody, and I'm including the volunteers and you, the staff, aren't scrambling in that last month or two to spend it down because, you know, that's a staff challenge, that's a volunteer challenge, and there's a lot of heartache around that because if, you know, it's the day before the deadline and you deny something – you know, that money is essentially lost. So maybe that becomes the ongoing conversation is just, you know, how do we think about planning budgets in a different way? And, you know, I mean, some of that you can't help. Like my neighborhood council, we had our major event in April, May, right? And so all the funds were being expended towards, you know, the last quarter. And we knew that, but, you know, I think maybe some better budget planning could kind of help a little bit with that conversation.
To what you're saying, Commissioner, this month we've actually conducted 3 live trainings. We did 2 at City Hall and 1 out in the regions, the 7 planning areas. We plan to keep this pace up, and exactly what you're saying, it is a training, and we're doing additional training just besides funding training that are subject matter focused, like MPGs or events, where we're hoping to provide additional support to the neighbor council so they have an easier time of spending their money. Overall, we have 96 out of the 97 trained on the system. We have 1 individual who hasn't been able to make it because they just had a treasure turnover like we were talking about before.
Sure.
So in terms of train-wise...
That's incredible, by the way. I mean, well done on that. Like, that was my major concern was, you know, I think I brought this up specifically was, well, good luck training all 97 treasurers, and you seem to have done it. You know, I mean, there's, you know, there's a certain amount, as you said, there's attrition. There will always be a treasurer in transition, so you'll never get 100%, but I would consider that 100%.
Well, I want to thank you on that one. By the end of July, we had about 85% of the neighborhood councils trained. So we did a massive training sprint. We did close to 4 to 5 trainings a week in the month of July. So we did hit most of the neighborhood councils. And I want to thank the work group members that we have. Brian Allen is sitting there, and Brent, and Glenn also. They were part of our work group who also helped make sure that neighbor councils came out and attended these trainings. And these weren't online trainings. These were live trainings where we asked them to come to downtown. And there was a lot of, you know, some technical difficulties with getting transportation, but we were able to get that done thanks to, you know, as a partnership with the neighborhood councils and our office.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
I hate to be negative, but I did call, and our funding person was on an RDO. Her email response, automatic, referred me to the number. I called the number. The person who answered thanked me very much, informed me that she was off on an RDO, and that somebody would get back to me very shortly. The following morning, a regular staff emailed me. Nobody called me back during the day. And I called as the president of my neighborhood council with a funding question. Wow. Turned out to be solvable. Our treasurer was able to solve it simply by calling the bank and asking them the question. And that was, you know, so that was the way it resolved. But I was a little discouraged that the entire day went by and there was no phone call. Yeah. But otherwise.
We talked about that too, because even the standard as we started the program would be 24-hour turnaround for phone calls. And we kind of know in this environment, for people that are on the phone right now, a 24-hour response is not quick enough. So we're working on that as well.
Okay. Yeah. But if she had said that we'll call you within 24 hours, that would have been one thing. But she said, no, somebody will get back to you shortly today. And very good on the training program. Thank you for getting things up so that people don't have to spend the time driving and then the time down here and then driving home again. So that'll be good.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now comment on number 10 from Glenn Bailey. So, Glenn, come and tell us the real truth about how this city clerk is working.
I'll stay for this.
I'm going to stay.
Hopefully 2 minutes. I mean, maybe one, but we might go to two. Glenn Bailey speaking as, I guess, president of the Northridge East Neighborhood Council and a second signer and card holder. And so, first of all, I strongly commend the city clerk's office funding program. It's, you know, night and day in terms of the ability, not only for our neighborhood council to resolve its MER challenges, because we're now up to date, current through October. Andrew, October, BAC's posted. That's a significant improvement. But also in terms of being able to track how things are going with other neighborhood councils. And so I do that primarily for the Valley, but I've also looked for the whole city just out of curiosity to see who has, is there activity? In other words, have they adopted and posted a budget? And there's still, I think, a couple that haven't. Have they generated MERs? And there's still a couple who haven't. Have they posted their BAC? And there's still a couple that haven't. And, you know, that's kind of a red flag, which I assume the funding is looking at. I particularly do focus on the Valley. We have two in the Valley, one in Region 2 and one in Region 3. So Region 2 is North Valley, Region 3 is South Valley. And those are issues related to those things, you know, not generating MERs, which means you can't approve them, which means you can't post them, or if there's no credit card transactions, all, you know, there's probably some sort of an issue there. I guess I'm going to go over my 2 minutes, so this is important. Regarding the Valley Alliance and Neighborhood Councils, actually, you could ask me a question, because I was part of that loop to deal with the details there. Regarding the denials, I do want to say that some of it is our fault. So, for example, we had a couple of things where it was miscategorized for a neighborhood purpose grant classification versus outreach. It gets denied if it wasn't correctly done. That's our fault for, you know, the drop-down menu. I've talked to treasurer of another neighborhood council where that treasurer put in one invoice but also need a second part of that. And so she put the second part in, not realizing that displaces the first. You only get one upload. So you've got to combine it and put your multiple pages together. So that's, you know, partly learning the system there. The other thing is that I see not enough neighborhood councils utilizing the outstanding commitments portion of the website, where they can put in things that they've already obligated themselves to, either the monthly reoccurring expenses that they know about, or that they've got these, as Commissioner Lippman mentioned, these major events coming up, so that you can get a better overall picture of your budget picture when you consider your MER. So I hope you'll ask me about the VANC thing, because I do have some information on that.
I'm not going to ask, but I'm just going to say I hope you were listening when they said that we're underspending, because I expect to bring that up at the next Valley Alliance meeting.
Okay, thank you.
I know. I understand.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Okay, number 11, discussion and possible action on a proposed definition for the terms of substantial and ongoing regarding the community interest stakeholder definition as directed by the Los Angeles City Council, file 15-1022. I wasn't here last meeting, so what was the discussion to?
I don't know if there's any discussion, but the City Council actually passed the ordinance passing to this commission the obligation, benefit, ability to do this. I actually have to read the actual ordinance. Shame on me, I have not. But
so
my recommendation would be definitions and such as that.
And an ad hoc question, an ad hoc committee to do this issue only can last, what, 6 months or something? Is there a deadline? Isn't there a deadline?
It's for a short period of time. There's not a time limit. This is Elise Rudin, City Attorney's Office. But it is for one purpose. So it would
right.
be the purpose of determining that as long as it's not ongoing after whatever it is they're deciding.
Right.
Has
and I remembered that. And we what we are charged with, obviously, is to define the definition for substantial and ongoing. That's what the specific issue is. So my question is, if I set up an ad hoc or ask volunteers to do whatever, to have an ad hoc committee on this, how long do we have to come up with that definition?
That would be up to the commission, to the president.
Well, is there a limit? Is there a far end that we can't go past, I guess is what I'm...
Well,
what I'm,
I think the suggestion would be to form the committee, to appoint the committee
okay.
for that purpose and have a date for them to report back. If
okay.
there's more time needed at that point, then
okay.
I would suggest going from there. But maybe in however time, much time you'd like them to report back with some recommendations.
Okay.
That doesn't exactly answer your question. You're asking if you
no,
go
but
past
the city attorney point. Never answers my questions.
Well,
okay.
I want to answer your question, Commissioner. I would suggest setting a time to report back, and then if they are able to do so within like a few months or however
okay.
time you wish, then
yeah.
you could go from there.
At least we know it's not forever. So, okay. So I haven't given this any thought, but I do want to ask. Because I don't mind volunteering myself, and I certainly don't mind naming Lynn. But I think we
I'll
need three people on the committee.
I'll do it too.
Okay. So we have, so I'm doing, I guess, can I do it that way? Because today I need Lynn for his experience, and so I want to appoint Lynn to this ad hoc committee on the definition for substantial and ongoing. Myself, because I was on the original committee and feel that I have some opinion on it. And then the vice chair, Eli Littman, just volunteered. And so I would like to name that as the – can I do that, Carmen? You're looking puzzled. Can I – I should have asked. Okay, I kind of went after the fact then. Is anybody else interested in serving on this definition, on the committee to define the definition of substantial and ongoing? I could tell they weren't enthusiastic. It's not a fun committee. All right, so I'm going to leave it as the appointments to our ad hoc committee on defining substantial and ongoing be made up of Commissioner Lynn Schaefer, Commissioner Eli Littman, and myself, Joy Atkinson. Okay. For some specific period of time, do we need to do that today? I figured maybe we better meet and discuss what we have to do, and then should we do the time limit today?
You might want to have you might want to have a date to report back on if there's any.
I'm feeling that we're going to have a lot of public comment and a lot of public meetings, and I would up it to 6 months, 6 months to report back in 6 months, but I might be too long. I don't know.
Well, we need to consider what Commissioner Littman, what the department's timeline is in terms of opening up for the elections, because that's going to impact both what subdivision elections and general elections.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Fong with the Department of Neighbor Empowerment. For the subdivision process, the application is due January 15th, and elections at the earliest would be held in April. But in terms of elections for the following fiscal year, the general elections, everything would have to be done by June of 2018.
But I think it's important for the April election because it's for neighborhood council elections. So
if it doesn't get done before then I think it's for the general elections. But in terms of – we have to be cognizant also that this would have to go, I believe, before the council as well, right? The Health, Education, Neighborhood Councils Committee.
So, suggestion on a report back date, February? Maybe?
It could be a status report date, just on a progress report, let's say. If you need more, if the ad hoc committee would need more time, or.
You could
set a shorter date to accommodate the schedules. See if it's done by then.
So, February. So why don't we, just for purposes of getting it into records, we'll have a report back date for the second meeting in February, the third Monday in February, whatever that date is.
And that's a status report?
To report back on what we've come up with. But between now and then, we'll be having public comment on it and doing some meetings and stuff. Okay? All right. Glenn has a comment on this.
I think, Mr. Bailey, have you used up your 5 minutes of public comment time?
No, it's about 5 minutes. It's a general public comment.
Okay. How much time would you like for this item?
The remaining
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Glenn Bailey, speaking as an individual, I guess. So first of all, another deadline to consider is the deadline for bylaw amendments of April 15th, because depending on what this commission does, neighborhood councils may need to take an action. So, for example, what's been proposed in the past we're one of a number of neighborhood councils, Northridge East, where we are elected, basically all stakeholders can vote for all offices. If you choose a
definition of the stakeholder that we find horribly objectionable. We may want to amend our bylaws so that we restrict the at-large, to restrict the community interest stakeholders to only vote for one or two seats. So far, we haven't done that. Some neighborhood councils have. So that's one deadline. Secondly, the outreach to neighbor councils goes without saying. I think that that's very important. And also, I just want to bring up a few thoughts while it's on my mind. One is for the educational category. We have run into a couple of neighborhood council selections in the last cycle where fight clubs or karate schools are calling themselves educational. They're not. They're businesses. But there's nothing in the definition that says you have to be chartered by, I don't know, however you get chartered, LAUSD or the state, to be, quote, educational. They claim that they're teaching classes in fight and in karate. They're teaching, and they're asserting that they're educational. So that's one thing that perhaps to look at. The other thing that we've ran to, both for that and for nonprofit, is the frequency of meeting or frequency of activity with the neighborhood council. So in one instance, the organization had one event in the within the neighborhood council boundaries in the entire year. That doesn't seem to be substantial ongoing, and yet there's no requirement to the contrary. So please look at that. Thank you.
Thank you. You're supposed to fill out a form, Jared, huh? You're supposed to fill out a form. Mike, did you want to say something about it?
Oh, no, I wanted to ask him how much time he wanted.
Come on, you can make the remark and then turn it into form.
11.
I just need the item number. Thank you. I just wanted to add, you know.
Evan.
Identify yourself for the record. We're on the air, so identify yourself.
Oh, Gary Fordyce, North Hills West, as an individual.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add, previously you had to deal with the Starbucks receipt. The new game in town that I'm observing is I'm a member of the Friends of the Library. I didn't want to name in the library. Friends of the Library, and you pay your $5, and you get to run around town in multiple councils. So it's just wanted to kind of tip you off on that in case you were not aware, but I'm certain most of you probably are, but I wanted to put it on the record.
Thank you. Okay. Now, did you? Did you want to say something about this, Mike?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Number 12 is public comment, discussion, and update. Oh, number 11. That's here. Okay. Gary spoke. And Glenn spoke. Okay. We're on to item number 12, public comment, discussion, and update regarding recommendations to the commission related to the Neighborhood Council funding, the Funding Equity Work Group registration link. Did everybody get letters out or communications in their regions or areas regarding the volunteers we're looking for the funding network?
I did.
Lynn?
I did.
Yes, and I did, and I want to
I did.
I haven't submitted mine. I was going to ask Lenny if he could. Oh, you did email it?
I sent, and you actually sent back and said thank you.
Oh, when you know what? I went to the, I got dental work, stop it.
I got
so
two, I gave you two extras and you said thank you.
Okay,
I'll look. But I'll send it again.
Okay. All right. And Representative Wiebe isn't here. Representative Wiebe isn't here, but in absentia, I want to thank her for doing a little outline of a letter that I certainly used to communicate with my neighborhood councils in South LA.
Yes, I can send it.
Can you
Yeah.
Okay. You need your list, too?
No, I have a list.
Debbie, yeah.
And I actually think I have a
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. You only get one?
Yeah, we only get one. Thank you very much.
No, he gets two.
No, you actually get two from your region.
Two from each region.
I could have sworn you said that we're the only one that gets one.
No, you only have one region.
But you get two people from it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I query staff? Can I query staff as to whether any of the responses have come in? You're shaking your head, yes?
Question? Okay, yes. Mike Fong with the Department of Neighbor Empowerment.
Yeah, can they fill out
We've received approximately 40 responses so far.
Four or 40?
40. So thank you to commissioners for sending information.
Are most regions covered, do you remember?
We'll have to check that out, but we want to encourage folks to apply. We have until December 15th. So thank you to the commissioners for your outreach efforts on this.
Okay. Thank you.
Last question.
Uh-huh.
Could you keep the commissioners somewhat updated as to what regions may not be replying?
Absolutely. And thank you so much to Mario for his hard work and efforts on this. We also include the link on the report, so you have access to that as well, but we'll do an analysis of that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome, Mario.
Okay. Number 13 is discussion and possible action regarding Board of Neighborhood Council Commissioner's newsletter. That's Commissioner Lippman.
Apologies. I didn't do anything on this agenda item. I'll get something for the next one, I promise. Please don't fire me. I said, I'll get something ready for the next one. Please don't fire me.
Obviously.
Yeah, it totally is. The mustache is...
Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Lippman's non-report? No? All right. We'll have it ready for the next meeting. Number 14 is commission business comments from commissioners on subject matters within the board's jurisdiction. Number one says comment on commissioners' own activities and announcements. I wanted to make an announcement on something I did today that's not really commission business, but it meant a lot to me. I attended today the funeral of Councilman David Cunningham, who was councilman for the 10th District many, many, many years ago. Oh, great, great, Carmen. Carmen has a program. And the reason I mention it here, and I just wanted it on the record that I wanted to give tribute to him, because for me personally, it was him helping me to understand what civic engagement was all about. He was the very first campaign that I was involved in as a very young person. And then when he became city councilman, he organized a women's steering committee, and I was the first president. And I learned a lot about the importance of civic engagement from him. So many people say, well, you know, in recent years, it was because Mark Ridley Thomas had the Empowerment Congress, and I certainly learned a lot from that. And I have this, you know, the commission that I'm working on now, but when I think back on what really pushed me, it was not only my family being involved in politics when I was very, very young, but when I got more mature, the first campaign that I worked in was David Cunningham, and everything they said today was true about him. It was very forthright. He told you like it was. He didn't mince words, but you learned a lot, and I just wanted to pay tribute because, you know, we lose our history on who served us or who made contributions to the community. And it was many years ago when he was on the city council. And then Bob Farrell came along, and now we have African-American. And now we have three African-Americans. And each group kind of stands on the shoulders of the group before them. So I really considered him a close friend, and I wanted to pay public tribute to him. Thank you. Any news from anybody else?
Number one, I believe I worked with his son in the DA's office.
You sure did.
Yes. He was a defense attorney. So that was my connection.
And he became a judge. He's a judge.
Yeah. Yes, I've got something for staff.
Okay.
Two things. One is, well, they're both questions that were asked. Question one. In the past, and I think I brought this up, we used to have trainings on weekends in different neighborhood council areas that drew as many as 150 people at one time. These were training in Brown Act, in parliamentary procedures and various other things related to meetings. I think that if you're looking for more staff and you do get some, that this would be a tremendous thing to try and bring back, especially for some of the newer board members. It was about 3 hours long, each one. It was on like a Saturday morning. I don't know if there's any Saturdays left in the month, but who knows. So that would be one. Number two, a question has been asked, and this comes from the Emergency Prepared Alliance. This would be for the city attorney as well, because you would have to ask them. One of the aspects that we're looking at is communication in areas. The Emergency Management Department is coming out with a new program, Ready Your LA Neighborhood, which is a takeoff on Map Your Neighborhood. And part of it has to do with communication and the use of what are called FRS radios. And the question is, can neighborhood councils for emergency preparedness purchase FRS radios and allow members of the neighborhood council to have them at their homes rather than in a central location, such as perhaps a secretary having a laptop or something on that? So that's something that for the department and probably the city attorney's office at the same time, but it's a question that was asked. I know what the answer has been in the past, but and we're trying to promote emergency preparedness and having a bunch of radios in one location for everybody to try and get to when Lucy Jones earthquake hits is going to be pretty much impossible.
We'll look into that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else? Nothing?
I'm not sure where exactly this fits in, so I'm just going to throw it out there, and you could correct me. I'm going to beg that that you give me forgiveness because I'm still learning the process. So here it goes.
I used to do that, too.
So here it goes. I have gotten numerous comments and concerns regarding the ethics training and the fact that one needs to sit on a computer for 2 hours when they're probably able to get it done within an hour and a half, or so on and so forth. And if you find, or if they find that you are off that computer before that 2 hours, it kicks you out. Please help me understand so that I can explain, because it makes us very unhappy.
That one's an easy one. Deputy City Attorney Carmen Hawkins, the ethics requirements, that is a state law requirement that all of us must comply with, and the state requires the 2 hour minimal period. So I always recommend that when Elise and I conduct our live trainings, that come spend 2 hours with us, because we actually try to teach them the ethics that they need to know as a neighborhood council meeting, as opposed to the more generic state law, you know, that's written. But it is, and the state, and the problem is if they don't do the full 2 hours, if they're doing it online, they can't get certified.
Okay. Thank you.
That makes it easy.
That makes it easy. Yeah, I can.
Yeah,
is that ethics training the same as like what we have to take?
Yeah.
Well, you can. I know. I'm not talking about personally. I'm just talking about the system. The system. The online system.
Comment?
You can go back and forth on the online system. It doesn't kick you off.
Let's not complicate it. The law requires that the total time spent doing the class is 2 hours. So, mm-hmm. Potential glitches for folks. So, the law requires if you do it online that it's 2 hours. And they track you. They track you and they give you a certificate.
Maybe because it did take me 2 hours and I never got in trouble, you know.
Just a point of information. Mike Fong with the Department of Empowerment, to follow up on the city attorney's point. There are supplemental trainings as well if somebody happens to go through the system before 2 hours is up. So there is a supplemental training, but as you heard from the city attorney, we do receive a number of comments about that. It has to be in aggregate at least 2 hours.
Okay.
Thank you.
The other commissioners, I have been informed that the one that the commissioners take will count for if you're a neighborhood council member, it lets you satisfy your need for ethics training.
So if I have taken my ethics training through the regular neighborhood council,
reverse.
If you take the ethics training as required, that you're required to take as a commissioner, that will also satisfy your neighborhood council.
Okay.
That your neighborhood council doesn't satisfy what you have to do.
As a commissioner.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Your commissioners are bound by different rules than neighborhood council members.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Any other remarks regarding number 14? No? Okay. That's the end of our agenda. And
make a motion.
You may do
that.
Go ahead.
Make a motion that we adjourn.
Oh, I was just getting ready to ask for that. All right. So it's a motion to adjourn. Do we need a second? A second?
I'll second.
All right. Been a motion to and a second to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everybody.